50 years ago, rocker Jimi Hendrix played at a packed Seattle Center Arena. He wasn't looking forward to that 1968 concert. He'd just returned to his hometown as a superstar after living for years in London, England. Music journalist Charles R. Cross has written extensively about Hendrix. He told Kim Malcolm the guitarist didn't feel welcome in the city where he grew up.
Hendrix had a very difficult family life. Both his parents struggled from alcoholism. His mother died when he was 16. That was very difficult for him. His dad had a long history of alcoholism and what one could at least call neglect, if not abuse. The home that Jimmy grew up in was very fractured. He had four other siblings that were taken away or given away by the state. One other brother that he did maintain contact with, but this was not an ideal family.
And then contrast that experience with what he had lived with in Europe, where he'd made a new life for himself.
Right. He leaves America. You know, he didn't immediately go to Europe right after he started his career. He played on the Chitlin circuit in the South, but he had a hard time breaking through, and his race was a big issue in America, where black and white radio were dramatically different. No one had crossover at that time. So Jimmy goes to Europe in 66 and suddenly is a star almost immediately. You know, literally within 3 days of getting to London, he was playing with Eric Clapton. It's really, truly extraordinary. There has never in the history of the world been a performer who went from nobody to superstar as fast as Jimi Hendrix.
The wind whispers.
And this, of course, was all happening in the year 1968, when there was a good deal of political unrest here in Seattle and across the country. What was that time like for Hendrix?
Yeah, so Hendrix returns in 68. This is his first concert as a superstar. He certainly played Seattle hundreds of times before when he was a nobody. But he returns with his album, his hit album at that point. And it was a very difficult time for Jimmy. He was brought here, you know, to play this concert, but he had mixed feelings about coming back to Seattle. They asked him if he'd go to Garfield High School and attend a lecture and talk, and he went. And this is just unbelievable. So much of Hendrix's story, the truth is very different than the myth that people believe. He speaks at Garfield High School at an assembly, and he's heckled a little bit.
And he was a student there. I mean,
he had been a student there. So the most famous person who ever will go to Garfield High School returns there. And the students, particularly the African-American students, did not completely accept him. Race was such a divisive subject in America at that point that Hendrix, who was playing rock music, which was considered white music, was not necessarily accepted by people who liked soul music. Hip hop that wasn't around yet. But there was this divide, and Hendrix was forever tormented by that. He felt that his music was too black to get on many white stations and too white to get on any black stations. No African-American stations ever played any of Jimi Hendrix's songs in America in that time. So he was saddened by that. Yet in Europe, there weren't those racial divides, which is why he broke out there.
He had this tumultuous relationship with his hometown, with his family, with his memories, his experiences here. He didn't have much longer to live after he played that show in February 1968. Did he ever come to any kind of reconciliation with his life, his growing up in Seattle?
Well, yes and no. How much reconciliation does anyone get at the point of death? No one leaves a life with a perfect death. With Jimmy, he had this weird prescient vision that he was going to die young. But you also have to remember, everyone was dying young then. You start adding that up. Part of that is drug and alcoholism. You throw enough drugs in and anyone's going to die at 27.
I'm going to leave this town. Gotta leave this town.
You touched on this earlier, but, you know, we're 50 years on from February 1968. How would you say Seattle's relationship with Jimi Hendrix, how has it evolved?
Well, it's certainly shifted. Hendrix is who everyone loves. There finally is a park. You know, I published my book in 2005. At that point, there was nothing other than a heated rock in Woodland Park Zoo to honor Jimi Hendrix. There was not one official thing. Myself and other people have lobbied for years that Seattle needs to do more to honor Jimi Hendrix. We can name a street after a Mariner who retires within 3 months, but this guy, who I think is the most important cultural person who ever was born in Seattle, we finally now have the first thing ever, which is a park. But I think there should be more. You know, if it were me, the SeaTac Airport would be named the Jimi Hendrix Airport. New Orleans calls it the Louis Armstrong Airport. But I'm not in charge of the city of Seattle, unfortunately.
Can you imagine what Jimi Hendrix might have to say, what he might think, if he were to look at the state of where we're at now in our national life? The same issues that he was looking at
well,
when he was a young man.
Yeah, everyone who lived during that era of the 60s, there certainly is an idea of deja vu. You know, the idea that we'd have mobs marching in Charlottesville with tiki torches, this is something that people in the 60s feel like we're done with as a country. We settled these issues. And yet, I think the topic of race was layered into everything Jimi Hendrix did. Even in England, which was a more progressive place, he was harassed occasionally by police for having a white girlfriend. Here was a guy who really felt that music was not about race. He didn't write black music. He wrote music. And he didn't play only to one kind of fans. Primarily his audiences were white, unfortunately. But to Hendrix, race was something that he was always trying to escape from, and yet in one way could never actually escape from. This will be-